This podcast is offered by the San Francisco Zen Center on the web at sfzc.org. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Thank you. I bet you do. And the Sangha here for your invitation. And to all of you who are here, thank you. How many of you are new here, first time? Okay, just a few. Okay. We're in the same boat. It's an honor for me to be here, so this talk will be an informal talk. It will be my offering to the founder, Great Master Shunyu Suzuki. Also an offering to my teacher, Master Shen Yan. An offering to the Sangha and all of you here. So thank you for the opportunity. When I came here, I was very delighted. First time being in the Green Gulch Farm Zen community. Especially the gulch part. Because my Dharma name, Guagu, the Gu part means valley or ravine. And my birth name is always at the peak in translation, Yongfeng. So when I first received this name, I asked my teacher, why did he put me all the way on the bottom? Because he said something very important. That was my first teaching in my teens. He said, your parents put you at the top, but the top will always be lonely. All the nourishment, the rain, will always flow away from you. At the top, unprotected by the elements and the wind, with nothing to support. For that reason, I put you on the bottom. The gulch, ravine, dam, valley will receive all the nourishment, all the rain, the flourishing, the green in the green gulch will be able to flourish. So I became very happy at that time. So guo means the result. So my name means result of the valley. So the name, I have another name that my teacher gave me. It's Zhen Xue. So it's Guo Gu Zhen Xue. Zhen Xue means correct learning. So it's been my aspiration, principle, you can say, of my practice to fulfill my teacher's expectation of me. Correct learning of being the fruit, the effect, or efficacy of the valley. Well, you can say, since I'm here, the Green Gulch. How many of you have never heard of my teacher's name, Master Shen Yan? Quite a bit. I met him in 1980. He came to the United States, New York, 1976. And I met him in 1980 as a boy. He passed away 2009. And the temple or the meditation center that I built in Tallahassee, Florida, is dedicated to him. I start after he passed away in 2009. My life direction kind of shifted to repay my gratitude to him. So saved up enough money to purchase a place. 2017, we purchased this large space with three buildings on it. The large one turned to a chan hall. The two smaller ones, kitchen and multi-purpose room. The following year, a 5-acre of land in the middle of the city became available. Very beautiful prairie, big oak trees. So we purchased that, along with two small houses, transformed into a retreat dorm. And I named the place Shen Yan Chan Yuan. Chan, Zen, Shen Yan was my teacher's name. Yuan means cloister, or sometimes translates garden. So the Chan garden or Zen garden of Shen Yan. And Shen Yan means holy adornment. So that's my way to dedicate. And ever since, every teaching that I give, every intense retreat that I lead, is my way to repay my gratitude to my teacher. How's this? So thank you for the opportunity for me to repay my gratitude to my teacher, also to the three jewels with the Dharma Sangha. We just finished the one-day retreat here. And my teacher was the lineage recipient of two existing Chan or Zen schools. One is Cao Dong, Japanese pronounce it Soto. Another one is Ling Ji, which is pronounced in Japanese Rinzai. So he established the Dharma Drome lineage to combine the two. So the way that we practice include Sikantaza, which I trust all of you are familiar with, just sitting. In Chinese, we call it silent illumination. And on the other hand, Huato or Koan practice. Being here at the Soto Temple, yesterday we practiced silent illumination in the tradition that my teacher taught it. And modified a little bit. Because when he first came to United States, the way he taught silent illumination practice was actually not practicable. He said, when you sit, don't use your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. So all of his Western students was like, oh dear. And then slowly he accommodated to his teacher you're allowed one sense faculty, the body. So he said, the body is sitting, the mind is sitting. The mind is not minding anything else but the reality of sitting. And over the decades, I've witnessed him accommodating more and more and more and more. So the way I introduce how to do silent rumination or Sikandaza practice is to basically I just made it more detail, more relatable, more concrete. Like sitting, how do you know you're sitting? There's a posturing, relaxed. There's a sense of weight. There's a kind of contact, groundedness. So more cookie crumbs for people to kind of follow and consume. So when you're sitting, it just embodied experiencing of sitting. And that means embodied experiencing of posturing, the sense of weight, groundedness. And the body may disappear, the weight may become very light. What remains is embodied experiencing of motionlessness, sitting. And even that, if you look into that stillness, the motionlessness, something is vibrant, something is alive there. There's a potency. Wakefulness in that experiencing. So the cookie crumbs are the body, the posturing, the sense of weight, the crutch. When you get to the heart of it, it's just that moment to moment to moment, wakeful. Experiencing. Something potent is there in the experiencing. What is that? That kind of wonderment. Not knowing, not giving it a label, no words and language. No container at the same time, awake. So there is simultaneous stillness and clarity. Right. So usually, when people are still, relaxed, they fall asleep. And when people say they're clear, that means their thinking is clear. So the silent illumination practice is reverting to the most raw, intrinsic state of being. Relaxed, yet clear. Clear, yet no wandering thoughts. Experiencing in that open, without containers, without words and label. So Chan Master Hongzhi Zhenjue, he has many ways to frame this, describe the state. Sometimes he calls it marvelous, marvelous, luminosity. When I use the word marvelous, it's a kind of openness feeling tone. It's a way to cultivate ourselves. Marvelous. Sometimes he also phrases it in terms of 古神. Gu means valley. Shen means spirit. But that's just our very poetic way of talking about the echoes in the valley. It's hollow, yet able to respond. Does that make sense? When you call out, it's able to respond. It's not dead. So, still, yet wakeful. Open valley, hollow, empty, yet responsive. Marvelous. I have a more colloquial way of saying this. IAG. It's all good. But it's important, like Green Gulch, the valley, the ravine, embody the spirit of silent illumination. Or Shikantaza practice. Responsive, yet hollow. Empty. Empty of what? Preconceived ideas. Stories. Containers that we project onto others. So it's a practice. Practice of being the valley. In the Chinese, the name Guogu, the Gu especially, the valley part, is connected to this idiom. It refers to being humble as a valley. Being humble as a valley. So for me, it's been a practice. When I first began, started with working with the breath, studying with him, and then by mid-80s, towards the end, 87, I was practicing Shikantaza, or silent illumination. And their principle is to be humble, receptive, yet not like empty like a blank piece of paper or oblivion. So very clear, freed from notions and ideas, yet respond what needs to be done, what can be done. So my teacher used to teach me normally, in the secular world, people, when they meet others, either they want to show how much they know with other people, sometimes others, they want to put down others to kind of amplify themselves. So he told me, as a novice, to always think of what you can offer to others. First response, what can I offer? So that offering is also contained in the meaning of the gulch, Green Gulch, valley, ravine. So far we've talked about a lot of things. Humility. Offering. Being receptive, open,
yet responsive. The valley or the gorge as the spirit of silent illumination practice beyond the cushion in the interaction with people, with circumstances that we find ourselves. And that openness, that potency, that receptivity, responsiveness, is called marvelous. You could call it wonderment. Wonderment. So, the single word, gorge, or valley, takes a lifetime of practice. Not only in the, on the cushion, but interacting with people. If we're full of stuff, notions, ideas, there will be no connection. Whatever connection that we have with people will be very superficial. So in order to be present to people, we have to be absent. Absent of our own judgment. So in that absence, in that openness, in being the valley, the gorge, the richness of those you interact with, and how they feel, they will actually feel seen, heard, cared for. So responsiveness come out of that. So that's a little bit about the name that my teacher gave me and its resonance with this place, when I saw this place. I don't have anything particular that I prepared, which is also in accordance with the valley, the gulch. But I understand that some of you will be first-timer, others will be seasoned practitioners. So I thought I'd speak about gulch, the Green Gulch, and its wider association with being the valley, the practice of humility, openness, and responsiveness that come from this openness. How do we do that? Should we all quit our jobs, avoid competition, give up everything? No. We can do all of that. We have our principle, all of you, since all of you are here, you can learn more about the gulch. See this as a principle with all the associated meaning that I identified and put it in practice. When you are receptive and open, at your job, in your life, without any fixations, you will be able to see what needs to be done, what can be done, working with causes and conditions. other people may be pushing their agenda, maybe selfing, you can contribute. But only when you are free of any fixed ideas, then creativity comes. And that comes from being open, that state of wonderment. All the things that you have learned in your life, you won't forget. Your intelligence will be more flexible. Your responsiveness will be more accurate. Your perception will be clear. That is the power of being in the valley. You will recognize all the resources, what needs to be done, what can be done. Because there's no fixed agenda, ideas. The fixations are your selfing that's going to block you. You have general direction in your company, corporation, your work, family, what needs to be done, right? For the betterment of everyone, general direction. But the specificity of the goals, you're open to see opportunities. That is the power. What kind of opportunities? Causes and conditions. Causes and conditions. In this world, all things come together because of causes and conditions. All things change and disperse because of causes and conditions. If our fixations are too strong, we won't be able to recognize what is actually present, the causes and conditions. So, in order to be fully present to what needs to be done, what can be done, we have to put down self. We have to be absent, hollow, open, respect. Receptive. Do you believe so? Yeah. Causes and conditions. In working with causes and conditions, we have to recognize causes and conditions. Sometimes this is the hardest part. Because we have things we want to do. We need to do our opinion, our views. Sometimes that blinds us to see what's actually present. So learning to diminish, to be able to at least bracket what we want to do, bracket, and see what the available causes and conditions are. So recognizing causes and conditions. Once you recognize, then you will know whether it's time to adapt to causes and conditions. Sometimes it requires us to wait for causes and conditions. Other times, create causes and conditions. Create to be the change. And this is not linear. Sometimes the more we adapt to causes and conditions, when we wait for causes and conditions, we actually recognize more causes and conditions. And we can go directly to creating the causes and conditions. To give you one example, during the pandemic, when the United States was experiencing the shortage of masks. Do you remember that? Do you remember when automobile companies were starting to make masks? I don't know if you know that. I don't know how they're able to do that, but because of the political tension between China and the United States, China, prior to the pandemic, was providing more than half of the global usage for, was it PPE, the mask, all the different things. More than half, but because of the tension between the United States and China, we didn't want to import any of them from China. Yet hospitals were in desperate need. That was the condition. All the Dharma centers wanted to help, but the Dharma centers were in isolation from its members. We couldn't respond to the need. Sometimes members were dying. So facing the causes and conditions, in conversation with my fellow Dharma brothers, who are teachers in different parts of the United States, recognizing the causes and conditions. From early part of 2019 all the way to April, I was waiting, watching, observing the causes and conditions. And I had an idea. Because there are Dharma Drum centers in China. So I quickly, within a month, I quickly gathered my students, those who are excellent with web design, my assistants, contacted all my connections and their connections. Raise funds to purchase PPE mask, approved mask, directly sent to hospitals. So I contacted East Coast, West Coast, and those teachers contacted their resources and told me the addresses and contact names for the hospitals, the local hospitals, so we can send directly to them. So within, I had set a very humble bar of $100,000. To raise, at least we can, all the Dharma centers, and this was Zen, Vipassana, Tibetan, $100,000, raise that, at least send to a box to all the hospitals. Within 1 month, I had to change the bar, because in 2 weeks, $100,000, I was like, 200. Within 4 weeks, we raised over $600,000. And we were able to purchase. So many of the Dharma centers became our satellites for letting us know the hospital. We all worked together beautifully. Sectarian boundaries became zero. And we purchased 1.2 million masks. We sent very quickly. We created a website. We have all the teachers and Dharma centers that contributed listed, because people want to be listed on the website. And that serve as contact points. And We got the direct addresses of hospitals and the names. And we contacted all the other Dharma centers that needed masks. So we sent it out. So working with causes and conditions. And because of our effort, other non-profit organizations that were involved voluntarily wanted to support us. Right? This is secular, like shipping companies, like large, like literally ships for crate. What we did is we bypass the normal route for large crates. Instead, we use UPS, which is directly from China, directly to the hospitals, as opposed to go through the custom, check this, check that, you know, tax of this and that. So it was a grassroots movement, and we called it Dharma Relief. Dharma Relief. And continuing that, George Floyd's murder, the pandemic, we sent masks, we kind of closed the gap between shortage of masks and US factories trying to catch up on producing the mask in our small way. Close the gap a little bit. And then once the factories created masks and so on, so our project was over. And then George Floyd happened. And then the ad hoc advisory board came together, welcomed Black Dharma teachers to come together and then join. And then we rolled out DR2, Dharma Relief 2. Now, Dharma Relief 1 was masks. Then DR2, supporting, raise funds to support Black Dharma teachers. They're the minority. So monthly stipend of $1,000. So they can use it to travel, to whatever they want, so they can spread the Dharma in their respective communities. So that's what I mean. Working with causes and conditions, recognize, adapt, wait, create. Basically, these four cover what needs to be done, what can be done. If we have something fixed that we want to do, an idea, then that becomes a block. Right. It's not to say we don't have any compass. We have a general direction. Benefit all beings. Offering support. Same thing in your work, in your family, in your friendship. We have to listen. We have to observe. We have to diminish self-referential notions and ideas so we can actually see what needs to be done and be humble about it, to bring everyone in. So that's the practice of the gulch, the valley. Empty, yet responsive. Silent, yet illuminating. Marvelous. IAG. So, this morning I offer this to all of you. It's a practice of a lifetime. The more you practice this, and it does take practice, to put down the self, to see what needs to be done, how can it be done. So this goes for when we do sitting meditation too, when we engage with other people, the same. When we sit, we offer our body to the cushion, to earth. We're completely grounded. And our heart, our mind, to the practice. Then you have nothing to do. Just relax. Give everything. So, when we're with others, absent, so we can be completely present. So we will be able to see more. We'll be able to see more. We'll be able to hear more. And when we talk with people, talking, we don't just hear the superficial words. We start to hear their heart. So heart and heart start to connect. So being receptive, that's a practice. That is the dynamic life practice of silent illumination, selfless wisdom, wisdom compassion, Green Gulch. All of you have the fortune to be here, to practice here, to support the center. It's a blessing. And the center offers nourishment in your life. So, this morning I offer this to all of you. If you have, we still have a little bit of time. So if you have question, feel free to ask. This is, the time is to 11:20. Yeah. If you have question, feel free to ask. Will they have microphone to ask the question? How many of you, for example, practice Shikantaza, just sitting? Okay, good. This is the Japanese version of silent illumination. Yes, so a gentleman in the back.
Thank you for being here. When you think about your teacher, what's the one sentence that often comes to your mind? How do you normally remember him? I'm very curious. It's been a long time you're with him, so I'm genuinely curious.
Yes. I think about his teachings. The most important teaching that helped me was body like a rag, mind like a mirror. There's an occasion when I was a novice. He asked me, what is Bodhi mind, Bodhicitta? And I gave him some stupid textbook answer, you know, altruistic mind. He says, no. He says, body like a rag, mind like a mirror. So like, and that teaching was the teaching that helped me enter the door of Chan. When I was at my low point, 1995. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're all welcome to practice that. Now that you have it.
What is body like a rag?
Body like a rag. use the preciousness of this life to benefit others. To clean. What does a rag do? Rag, clean. We just clean. And, you know, other people, things that other people don't want to do, things that other people don't want to clean, you clean. Especially in the monastery. When I was his attendant, so we traveled 3 months in the United States, 3 months in Taiwan, continually. So in the United States, I had a lot of job. Publishing director, attendant, rotating chef, and translator. It's a lot. When I go to Taiwan, there's a lot of monastics, so very free. But our Taiwan, at that time, Nongchan Monastery, was basically just shacks. All these illegal buildings, not proper, you know, next to this farmland, fields, rice fields. The only legal part was where the Buddha hall is, portion of it. But we just kind of kept on building, you know. And the bathroom that we had built was made out of cement. I don't know if you know about cement. Cement in a subtropical country, cement soak up all the humidity. And the toilet is built in the cement building. So what do you think is soak up? So that was the place. It's always wet. It's always wet. So you always need attending. So in Taiwan, my job was basically pretty free. Because he has attendant to clean his laundry, doesn't need translator, doesn't need someone speak English. So this is told me to water some orchids. That was my job. And I saw the toilet. No one's cleaning the toilet. So besides my, every day I just sat for 6 hours because I got nothing to do. I just sat in the Chan Hall. Outside of that, where can you find Guo Gu? Toilet. So they start calling me the toilet monk. So I'm constantly wet, rolling up my pants, my shirt. I'm constantly wet, sprinkling it, cleaning it, and drying it. I just hung out in the men's toilet for the public, especially Sundays. You know, a lot of people are like, Sundays, a lot of people show up. I'm at the toilet. You know, things that people don't want to do. Body like a rag. Toilet, it doesn't mean people look down at you. This must be the lowest rung in the monastery. Right. Look down at you because I'm all wet. It's fine. Mind like a mirror. One time we had these officials, high officials, brought dignitaries from foreign countries. And you needed a translator. Where the heck's Guo Gu? Toilet. And these dignitaries go through the toilet. They're like, go through them. You see, it's all wet, sweating, because it's hot. And then they needed a translator. So quickly, clean up a little bit, go there. Those people in suits, like, is that the toilet? And they saw me speak fluently. In English, they said, oh my goodness, Master Shen Yan's disciples. Even the toilet monk speak fluent English. After it's done, go back. So they greatly respected Master Shen Yan. So things that people don't want to do, things that need to be done and you can do, body like a rag, mind like a mirror. People laugh at you, look down at you. You're not oblivious. You know. Just smile. Sometimes you have to fake smile because vexations come up. You know, inner critic, self-disparagement. You want to be correct. I am attending. Just put it down. So fake it until you make it. So my teacher was very good at that. Just poke at me sometimes. Public humiliation, that was his number one weapon for my selfie. You know, sometimes it come out. I was young, my 20s. I remember one time, big auditorium, 1,000 people. My teacher was giving a teaching on the Vimalakirti Sutra. This sutra about non-duality and wisdom. And I was his attendant. You know, teacher goes on stage. I'm the one who followed next to him. You know, prepare. I was getting all psyched, making sure I look good. Stupid stuff. And then on stage, my teacher says, "Did you bring the notes?" And I was like, "I'm sorry, teacher, I forgot the notes." And I left, bolted. My teacher, also, he practiced that. You know, the kind of smile that you really want to get angry, but you have to smile because there are 1,000, he went like this. Other people, they don't know what we're talking about. And my teacher, great wisdom. He's able to respond like lightning all the time. So his opening talk to break the ice was, "Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for..." He was a teacher for 3 presidents that learned meditation in Taiwan. Just all these dignitaries. He says, "Thank you. My idiot attendant forgot the notes for today. So today's talk will be the overall message of the Vimalakirti Sutra." And then I was like, oh. And everyone recognized, "Oh, you're the..." "Next time, don't forget." I'm like, "Yes." So, whatever they're selfing, humility, low, low. Whenever too many things are in the mind cluttering, then you don't know what needs to be done. What can't be done? Because you're just self-absorbed in whatever this wandering thought is happening. You see? So that meaning of being the valley, being the coach, very important. I hope it will be useful for you. So you can kind of embody the spirit of Shinryu Suzuki. Great teacher, set up this place.
Is there a relationship between the teachings of Zen and the martial arts, such as wrestling, archery, and even swordsmanship?
I think people can relate it if they want to. Yeah, people can make teachings relatable to anything, basically. Historically, there is the legend. There is a legend of the first ancestral master in China, Bodhidharma, who came to China, met the emperor, Emperor didn't understand his teachings, kind of left, went to the Shaolin monastery. The monks are falling asleep, lack energy, health is very bad. So eventually, he taught martial arts. Yeah, that's the legend. Yeah, true, not true. Yeah. The important part is not only martial arts, archery, the arts, literature. The important part is we have to make that connection between Zen practice with all aspects of our life. Not only like in this one sphere of skill set. Yeah, you can do it. But other spheres, you know, cooking, you know, being, communicating with others. Yeah. Like the gulch. Open, receptive. What needs to be done? What can be done? How? Work with causes and conditions. Recognize. Adapt. Wait. Create. Two more minutes.
Thank you. Well, you spoke of the marvelous and silence that's vibrant, you know, emptiness that's vibrant, and I say, oh, I'm sold, you know, that sounds good. And then you also spoke of the cluttering, wandering thoughts and stories, and that seems to be a problem. What many of us may not have heard, me, like, for example, in your talk was, what about all those? What do we do about those? We pick them up and throw them out. We try to kill them. What do we do with those? Marvelous doesn't just come all by itself.
Yeah. All those things are marvelous. All those things are marvelous. You know, the notion of good and bad, success, failure, having, lacking, gaining, losing, that's all come from a particular, very specific vantage point. Selfing. And we can turn everything that we meet from that self-referentiality, we can turn in on ourselves and make ourselves into a thing and attack it. Not good. You're not good enough. You don't have the skill set. So wandering thoughts, you know, scatteredness. The Chan Zen position is, it's all good, IAG. On the foundation of that, with that kind of feeling tone of, it's all right, embrace and transform. Practice necessary? Totally necessary. Vexations need to be transformed. But not transformed out of that's bad or that's good. Transform out of you're already good, but let me just work on it a little bit. See? Then possibilities will come. You will if you already have a thing, this is bad. That's like the self. The mind is not open. If your mind is open, think, already good. I can put you here and allow you to flourish. Otherwise, you wouldn't. The only place, if it's not good, the only place is garbage. Right? If you put the weeds, things that are kind of out of place, thoughts, you're not supposed to have this thought, allow it, you put it somewhere else. Everything has its place. Everything has its place. When things are out of place, then it becomes obstacle. So if your heart is one of the green gulch, one of the valley, You seem marvelous. You see, it's all good. Are there social injustice? Are people dying, lacking masks? People are dying in hospital. Yeah. It's all good in your heart. What needs to be done? What can be done? We do it. Everything will come together. So wandering thoughts, we don't, when we sit, for example, we don't see it as bad. We don't try to get rid of it. We don't try to fix it. But what needs to be done in this moment is skandhata. Does the name mean you have to mind this, mind that, deal with this, deal with that? No. Like wandering thoughts come? Yeah. Daddy is sitting. Today's Father's Day. Sit. Right. Difficulties come? Yeah, come this way. Sit. That's what needs to be done. So more and more, the negative emotions, difficulty, the inner critic, more and more we expose them. We don't suppress them. We don't follow them either. We're not oblivious to them. We embrace them. At the same time, put them in their place. Right now, we sit. Right? So this identification with them slowly diminish. You can see everything. Everything becomes opportunity. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by the San Francisco Zen Center. Our programs are made possible by the donations we receive. Please help us to continue to realize and actualize the practice of giving by offering your financial support. For more information, visit sfzc.org and click Giving. May we fully enjoy the Dharma.